Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. When John Hodgman signed off from his role as the deranged billionaire on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart in 2015, he was headed to a faraway land.
I've been appearing on this show for almost 10 years now. I'm retiring to an exclusive gated community.
Wow, you're going to Florida?
But no, John, an exclusive gated community on Mars.
Shortly after he landed in Vacation Land, which is the title of the book that chronicles his experiences in Massachusetts and Maine, not Mars, and his adjustment to the middle-aged adulthood life. Now in his new book, Medallion Status, Hodgman details a different adjustment from TV show stardom to being slightly less famous. As the book's description reads, it's about his realization that he is no longer platinum status and has to get comfortable in the middle seat again. John Hodgman joins me now in the studio in the only seat across from me. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Yes, hello. I'm really glad to be here. This is my hometown NPR station.
There we go.
Yeah.
And you, we want to hear from you. What do you want to ask writer, actor, comedian John Hodgman? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. And we are live streaming on Facebook. You can send us questions and watch there, too. All right.
Yeah, ready? Ask me anything. I know a lot of things, and when I don't know, I will make up.
Yeah, we've learned that.
Yes. Although now I'm telling the truth, mostly. I don't tell fake facts anymore the way I used to do on The Daily Show, because everyone's doing it now.
I was going to say, it's kind of not your shtick anymore.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's been taken over by many high-level government officials, so, I just try to tell the truth.
So in Medallion Status, this comes on the heels of Vacation Land. Mm-hmm. We talked about that. But now you're taking us down this other memory lane to explore your true life experiences in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Would you just wake up one day and say, this is what I want to write about?
No, you know, I can only present the stories that I have, and my story is an odd one. I mean, it's good that I'm on radio. Anyone who looks at me says, oh, he should not be on camera. He looks like a weird man baby with an ugly beard.
Wait, what are you saying about people who are on radio?
Well, I'm not saying anything. You should be on camera. Everyone. I'm just saying that my career on camera was wildly implausible. I started as a writer of humor for the internet. I wrote a humor book, got me on The Daily Show as a guest. That got me on The Daily Show as a contributor, that put me on to the Apple ads, that sent me on this strange career doing guest spots as various mustache creeps on different shows like Bored to Death or Mozart in the Jungle and so on. It was a completely unexpected career in acting that I hadn't trained for, that I had to get better at very quickly. You know, there is a thing called imposter syndrome. Everyone, even the most accomplished people, feel like they're faking it and are about to be found out. Sometimes you are faking it. And it's a gift to be found out and be taken aside and going, you're not doing a good job.
Well, let's talk about these evil mustache guys for
yes.
a minute. Because I was cracking up from the beginning of the book, because very early on in the book, we start talking nudity. And who knew you were going to do that?
I certainly did not expect that there would be I would have to sign a rider to my contract explaining how nude I was going to get.
That's right.
On Mozart in the Jungle. And it says right at the top of the rider, nude rider, which is like two words I had never thought I would put together in my life.
Or a new kind of superhero. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm reading it, and you're talking about the fact you're getting all prepared for it. You're negotiating it out. They want you to wear this kind of nude-colored sock.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, why?
I had my choice of privacy garments.
Right, right.
They were very intricate privacy garments, and they were all ridiculous because even the quote-unquote Caucasian-colored ones were 1,000 times more bronzed and healthy-looking than my skim milky pallor.
So you decide the right answer then is to just say, hey, why don't I skip it entirely and just be naked?
Yes. I wanted to dive in. I had learned that when life offers you interesting opportunities, say yes to them. And so I was like, let's go ahead and show the world the nude male monster that I am.
But as you point out, they did not say yes to that.
No, the director was like, we would not like to traumatize the entire crew. You can wear that sock.
So by the time I get to the end of the chapter, and I'm wheezing because when I laugh too hard, I get asthma.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's all right.
I have my inhaler with me in case you need it.
Well, I might by the end of this. It turns out what you're trying to say is I'm going to lay myself bare in this book.
Yes. The book is about what it's like to have a life as a very famous minor television personality and all the strange secret rooms and first class lounges and exclusive parties you get in, admitted to, even with the minorest of fame, and then what it feels like to get kicked out of them one by one till you're not even as famous as the least famous corgi on Instagram.
So we'll come back to the corgis because
yes.
also funny. But there is a sadness to the arc of this book. You sound Like you're grieving something a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Being on television's great. Everyone's nice to you. You get snacks.
Everyone even, here will tell you I'm a big fan of snacks.
Sure. And of course, especially if you did not expect to ever be on television. I got to enjoy it as much as a tourist as anything else and see into this strange world. But then there are the moments where things, you know, our status depletes over time. So you lose a job. Anyone might lose a job and you feel like, who am I anymore?
Were you not able to... let me rephrase that. So why stop doing it? There is nostalgia. You lost some of the perks. You've moved down from your platinum status.
That's right. Yes.
So
the medallion status part of the book refers to my obsession with a certain airline's loyalty rewards program.
Beloved airline.
Yes. I would not name the airline in the book because they're not giving me money. So I refer to them as beloved airlines and chasing not just gold or platinum, but diamond medallion status. As my status in culture tended to go down, I became more and more obsessed with getting this imaginary medallion. And a diamond medallion is dumb, right? I mean, you can understand why there would be a gold medallion in the world, but
right.
Carving a diamond into a round disc is just a good way to ruin a diamond.
All right. So is there anything more existential than snacks that you miss about the fame that you had?
Well, you know, the gift of fame, especially television fame, is that people will stop you on the street. And sometimes they'll be scared because they're like, oh, you're a weird ghost from television. But most of the time, and I'm very grateful, people would say, I like what you do. And that's a very powerful feeling. And a lot of people, to be seen that way, most people aren't seen or recognized on the street or even in their own families. And that is the sort of thing that it is hard to let go of. No one wants to be anonymous, you know. Not everyone wants to be famous. And what I've discovered is that, you know, all you can do is give yourself fully to the world and the experience of this world, to tell your story as nakedly as possible, covering yourself with a privacy garment or two.
So
and throw yourself on the mercy of the world and interesting things come back.
So I'm going to push back on you in just a second. But
please.
First, listeners, I have 800 questions. I'm all good here. But you may have some questions, too. Call, if you do, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK to join this conversation. You're not anonymous. There are twice as many people in the control room right now as there usually are
yes.
for any segment I record
yes.
in Radio Boston.
And it's important that they do not make eye contact with me when I leave this room.
So,
no, of course not. I just mean to say that, you know, there are moments in time when you get stripped bare, whether it's for a nude scene on Mozart in the Jungle, or you lose your job and you lose the status that comes with that job, or someone dumps you and you have to rethink, who am I? You know, I thought that we were in love or we're not. There are moments when you're humiliated and you're told you're faking it, you're not doing a good job. And all I want to say is that humiliation is a good process to go through.
Why?
You learn who you are. You learn what you look like inside.
So who are
you? You look like to other people.
Who have you learned you are?
Oh, well, I'm someone who has a very popular podcast, and maybe that's what I should have, the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm a dad, you know. I'm a writer. I'm pretty good at being an actor on television, but not the greatest. I'd love to go back, but I'm happy to see what else this weird fate offers me.
So some of the more... poignant moments are when you explore what it means to be famous and juxtapose yourself with other models of fame. So let's
sure.
go back to the dogs.
Yeah. Well,
right. Tell us the story about Linus and Chomp.
Sure. So I, you know, I perform my imitation of stand-up comedy. I'd been at the San Francisco Sketchfest Comedy Festival and hadn't been invited to a very exclusive party hosted by Adam Savage, the former Mythbuster, who's got a private workshop where he replicates all these science fiction and fantasy props. He's got a Han Solo frozen in carbonite. He's got an Admiral Akbar dressed up in Russell Crowe's Napoleonic Wars uniform from Master and Commander. It's a wild scene, especially if you're an asthmatic nerd like me. I was so excited to be there and see all my comedy friends in this exclusive party. And then I saw these two people standing holding these two corgi dogs. I'm getting all this attention, and it made me mad. I was like, why are those dogs getting more attention than me? That's a weird – I don't recognize them from comedy. Who are they? I said to my friend. And he said, who invited the guy? I said, who invited the guys with the corgis? He said, oh, they weren't invited. The corgis were invited. They're Linus and Chompers, two famous corgis of Instagram.
Kind of really famous.
They're really famous. Chompers has a manager. Chompers has co-sponsorship deals. And this is the tip of the iceberg, I've learned. There's a whole universe of famous corgis and other dogs on the internet that are far more famous than I will ever be. And that's when I realized I don't know what entertainment is anymore.
So do you now? I mean, I imagine the book, you kind of finished the drafts and sent it into the publisher months and months ago. Have you been reflecting on that? What does it mean to be famous?
Well, I mean, what you want it to be is that you tell a story that resonates with people and they enjoy it and they can say so. What you don't want it to be is sort of full-bore immersion therapy and sociopathy, where everything in your life is catered to with so much affirmation that you don't know who to believe anymore and no one will tell you the truth about yourself. I mean, it's a good thing that I don't have a face for television per se. Character actor, fine. But like, I learned from being on television that however nice and decent I am in the world, people will cast me as creepy villains all the time. That's just how I look to the world. And in many different ways, fame reflects back on you how the world sees you. And you can either learn from that, or you can pretend that it's not true. And I'd rather learn from it.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Kevin from Amesbury, you are on the line with John Hodgman.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Judge.
Thank you very much, Kevin. How are you?
Be in your presence. I'm calling because I've been a fan of your work for a long time.
I'm
a huge fan of the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Thank you.
You seem to have a really amazing, strong moral sensibility for like a silly internet podcast.
Thank you very much.
It's actually a wonderful thing. I listen with my wife and my son. And I was just curious as to like where you think that moral framework, how that was developed. And has there been any sort of intentionality to its development?
So let's give it back to John so he can answer you, Kevin, and you can stay on the line.
So the podcast he refers to, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, you can Google it if you want. It started as a joke about 9 years ago. My friend said, do you want to do like a Judge Judy show but for a podcast where people call in with minor disputes about how they load the dishwasher or whether a hot dog is a sandwich? And friends and spouses and
siblings. It is not, by the way.
Thank you. That is very refreshing to hear.
Just saying.
I don't want to hijack this whole conversation.
Right.
This
fair enough. Kevin is still listening.
Takes up about 30% of my life now. But there are people yelling at the radio right now.
That's okay.
You're wrong, everybody. And, you know, I wanted to do it mostly because I wanted to present myself to the world rather than the sort of the exaggerated version of myself that people knew from The Daily Show, the deranged millionaire, the resident expert. I wanted to show them who I was, not necessarily to be funny, but to interview people and hear about their lives all over the world and then tell them who's right and who's wrong, because I do have a very strong sense. But I've learned from it. I mean, it's been 9 years of hearing disputes between people, and what I've learned is that in heterosexual male-female married couples, dude is almost always wrong. I never thought that was true. I always thought it's touch or go, but I have a lot of data points now. Guys have weird systems in marriages for how to load the dishwasher, and they're usually wrong.
All right, so I don't know if Kevin is still on the line, but Kevin, you're wrong, just so you know.
I don't know that. I think, Kevin, there are definite outliers, and I like Kevin's style for calling in.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to take one more call. Ellen from Lowell. Ellen, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just saying that, how are you doing? I appreciate what you're saying. I'm not famous or anything, but I was in grad school on full academic scholarship, and then I developed epilepsy.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And I was raised to believe that I had to be picture perfect and come across as impressive, and I had to get real sick. I had to develop this epilepsy that's under control now with my medication.
Great.
But that I finally learned that it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
And I've got much less stage fright and much less hassles just because I decided that it was okay not to be okay.
Yeah, I really appreciate that story, and I think you raised something really important, which is people tend not to appreciate that life needs to be messy, and you're going to take body blows, literally to your body, you know, sometimes. And if you can embrace those changes and get back to who you are as a core person, it's actually a relief. It's a relief. I'm glad you're not suffering, or I hope you're not suffering, and I'm glad you've got everything under control. But it sounds like that journey into unpredictability and a change in life actually is one that was beneficial to you. Yes, no, I hope.
I think we may have lost it.
It was beneficial, especially when my husband wasn't freaked out by it.
Yeah.
And
that's,
we met during when the whole thing happened. But I have trouble finding work because I can't drive.
Right.
But
you and your husband met during this process.
Overqualified.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you, Ellen.
I'm sorry.
I was just saying you and your husband met during during this health issue in your life?
Yes.
And he's still with you?
Yes. Yes.
There we
and
go.
And we've been married almost 31 years.
Congratulations. That's a perfect counter data point to all of the over-controlling dudes I talk to on my podcast. Good job.
All right. So we don't have a ton of time left.
That's fine.
My instinct was to have you read something. Is that something that you'd like to do? Because you're such a good writer.
Whatever you would like.
All right. Let's have you read a little bit. There is a swear word in the passage we picked. Please don't say it.
Oh, sure. I will go over it.
All right. And I may stop you before the end of the passage. We'll see. But why don't you do a little reading for us? This is from a chapter where you're talking about Disney jail. And
yes,
you're discussing babies and what happens when you hide your hands behind your face.
Yeah, right. So I'm talking about peekaboo. I'm not sure if anyone ever heard of this game before. Peekaboo confuses the babies, but not for long. They may think, oh, so sad, bye-bye forever face. But babies get on with their lives. They get right back into it, pushing their tongues out and growing their brains and pooping their pants until, oh, peekaboo face is back! And then they are scared out of their minds. What witchery is this, science has shown babies to think. But as fear always leads to laughter, except in cases of death or maiming, so the baby's terror eases into the relief and growing understanding that face is not back. Face was always there. Ha ha, say the babies. Face will always be there for me. Turns out it's hands that are the jerks. Who saw that plot twist coming? Not me. I'm just a baby. Oh, look, face is laughing now. This is a fun game, I guess. I wonder what... Ah, face, where are you?
Let's... Sorry, I've read that like 17 times. It still makes me laugh.
Great, I'm so glad.
So I wanted to also get to this point because we have a little time left. Your children figure into your decision making.
Right. Well, I talk about peekaboo because what I discovered as I was flying back and across the country for this television comedy that I was on, that's how I was getting all these medallion qualifying miles on Beloved Airlines, was that my children missed me. And that was not something that had happened during much of their early their early life, right? But because as babies, they developed a sense of object permanence. And they knew that I was gone, but I would be coming back. But then what happens when kids get older, and my kids started hitting preteen years, was they started noticing I was gone. And they started noticing changes in their own life as they approached the change of the preteen years, where they become little werewolves. And they see and they know that their bodies are changing. Then they wonder, maybe dad's not coming back. And it was heartbreaking to have to say over and over again, I have to go away again. And my son, who was 11 at the time, would go for work. And most of the time I would say, yes. But one time I had to say, no, I have to go get an imaginary medallion across the country because I'm so close to Diamond Medallion. It was a really hard conversation to have with a child.
Yeah. So last question, just briefly. You seem to me to be a man at peace. Are you a man at peace?
As much as an anxious only child from Brookline can be, yeah. You know, I think it was an incredible adventure that I got to have and one that I'm still having. But I do feel more comfortable talking to people, you know, about their journeys through epilepsy and why that first guy is probably a nice guy, but all husbands are creeps on my podcast.
All right. Writer, actor, and comedian John Hodgman. His new book is Medallion Status. What a pleasure to have you in. Thank you
so much for having me. It was a real treat.
John Hodgman will be live at WBUR City Space tonight to discuss his book, but sorry, his event is sold out.
However, I will be at Brookline Booksmith tomorrow night, Friday evening from 6 to 8, just signing and having fun, and Parsnip the Corgi will drop by.
Perfect. That is, stay with us. We've got more coming up. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.